This Fred and Jeff Show podcast is brought to you by Five Star Pest Control, Anthony's Cigar Emporium, and Arizona Party Rental.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure,
direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
The Fred and Jeff Show.
This is Friend Jeff Show.
What was that?
Oh, I was just watching the board up, pushing buttons.
Uh-huh. Once again, demonstrating that you can't walk and chew gum at the same time.
I can't actually do that. I just can't watch the board up, push buttons, because it like throws me off. But anyways, this is the Friend Jeff Show.
Thank goodness.
This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, the history, and the culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful.
That is exactly right, Fred.
And we invite you to visit us at friendjeff.com. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and you can even download this wonderful tome of wisdom and entertainment off of iTunes or Beyond Pod.
Beautiful, beautiful.
So, Jeffrey, today,
yes,
of all days,
yes,
that we're doing the show,
yes,
it's Mom and Dad's 51st wedding anniversary.
Yeah, happy anniversary, Mom and Dad.
And the irony is...
50 years.
And the irony is that every single week for the last 3 years, our parents have diligently listened to this show.
And you know what is crazy? It's not their 50th anniversary.
I said 51st.
Oh, did you say 51st?
Yeah.
Roll back the tape.
I did say 51st.
Happy anniversary,
because
Mom
I always
Dad.
Like saying that their wedding anniversary is 1 year and a few months...
Before you were born.
Before I was born.
Yes, so we're knock all legal.
Yes, the Catholic Church doesn't frown upon my birth.
Well, at least not for that.
Yeah, exactly. But I was saying, getting to the irony is that they've listened to this show every single week for the last 3 years. They're not listening today.
What?
They're up in Phoenix because they took our little nephew, James.
Oh, that's right.
Back. They're flying out of
Phoenix, well, Sky Harbor.
Yeah, I was trying to come up with an alternate name for that area of the state.
Yes.
They're flying our little nephew back to Madison, Wisconsin.
That's right. We're going to miss him.
Yeah, he's quite the character.
He is. He's a great kid.
I love harassing that little kid. And it was funny, last night he came home and he had these really, really dark sunglasses on. And this was like, 8, 9 o'clock at night. And apparently Mom and Dad had bought him these super special spy glasses.
Really?
Yeah, that have 20 minutes of video capability. So he was walking around going, you're just looking around.
But he's really watching a show as
no,
he walks
no.
into a wall.
He's taping.
Oh, it's a video camera.
Yeah, video camera in the glasses.
That's got danger written
so he
all
told
over
me,
it.
Don't tell my mom. So I had to give my Christy a heads up.
Oh, are you doing it right now?
Yeah, so Christy, if you're listening on the World Wide Web,
yes,
beware of James when he wears glasses.
Right. Make sure that all body parts are covered when James walks into a room now.
All right, so there's tons of stuff going on in this community,
and it's
Jeffrey.
It's been raining and raining. It's absolutely, the wet summer is absolutely.
You know, the other day it rained
fabulous.
So much they had to cancel a Padres game.
That's right.
So
Friday night.
Tonight is the doubleheader.
Doubleheader today for the Padres. So get out and see some good minor league baseball.
Excellent minor league baseball. You know, it's a shame that we're losing these guys because they are doing phenomenally well.
Yeah, the Padres are kind of. There are a lot of Padres fans in Tucson, but they're kind of a Jekyll and Hyde team. But right now, they're hitting the ball pretty well. They beat the crud out of somebody yesterday, I saw on the sports page, as I saw my beloved Pirates beat the Marlins. Let's go, Bucks.
I know people can't see me on radio shaking my head and rolling my eyes.
It's kind of like when you talk about tequila. Oh, no, I only drink tequila.
Or good stout.
What else is going on here in the Old Pueblo?
Oh, well, Third Thursday is still going on over at Tucson Botanical Gardens.
Right.
So I think, let's see, August 15th in a few weeks is the next one, and you can show up. They have live music. There's an artist reception. I think it's, pet-friendly if your pet's on a leash. Just have an awesome time in the early evening over at Tucson Botanical Gardens. Tonight,
Science Sundays
over at the museum,
Children's Museum of Tucson.
Yeah. Tonight, Jeffrey, is the last show of The Princess Bride
at
Valley of the Moon.
The Valley of the Moon.
Now, have you gone out yet?
I have not. I'm planning on going tonight.
Yeah, tonight is the sixth of the last show. They're actually going to do, I think, an encore in August, August 3rd, maybe.
It's been that well received.
Well, yeah, but I saw it, and it was done in only the way the Valley of the Moon can do it. It was just wonderful. It was charming. It was just fun from top to bottom. It's a great family entertainment. You know, we're most likely have some early afternoon rains today, but take advantage of the cool evening.
Absolutely.
After the rain, and check out Valley of the Moon over on near Tucson Boulevard and Allen, just north of Prince. So go out there to Valley of the Moon. You have any stuff, fun stuff?
Oh my gosh, Fred, there really is a lot. Oh, you know what? I wanted to tell everybody that we want to welcome aboard our friends at Zocalo Magazine.
Ooh, yeah.
Zocalo Magazine and the Fred and Jeff Show have put a little plan together to help start promoting more urban culture and arts. So you guys are going to see a lot more stuff from us and a lot more stuff from them on all the fun things that are going on arts-wise and culture-wise here in the Old Pueblo.
Yeah, I mean, they promote a lot of the fun stuff going on that, I mean, we miss tons of. I mean, you know, you open up Zocalo and you're like, wow, I missed that.
Yeah, I mean, they're really dialed in over there.
Yeah, and they're
David's got a crack crew of reporters out there finding all the cool stuff that's going on in everything, the music scene, the art scene, museums, I mean, all kinds of great stuff.
Yeah, that's right, and it is just phenomenal to see all these things going on.
Right under our little noses.
That's right, in the Old Pueblo.
In the Old Pueblo.
So the last thing I do want to plug, Wright Flight, the school year starting up. Actually, Wednesday, I think, August 1st.
I can't believe the summer
Tucson
is
Unified
gone.
School District, the largest district in the, I think Vail's already started, and some other schools might start a little bit later. But Wright Flight is out there. If you're a teacher who wants a wonderful tool to motivate your students, contact Robin Stoddard, Lieutenant Colonel, retired Robin Stoddard, over at Wright Flight, WrightFlight.org. And they're putting books together right now for material packets for the kids to motivate them to reach
higher
heights.
We're having a hard time dragging this out of you, aren't we?
I'm just trying to I'm coming up with some acronyms and
adjectives. Yeah, don't do that on here, friend. Just come out with the story. Come out with the story.
So,
Wright Flight is a super cool thing.
Yeah, no,
kids learn to fly up.
It's not learning to fly, Jeff. They learn about aviation. They make spectacular progress in their schoolwork and at school, and then they get to fly a plane end of it.
At the end of the day, they learn to fly, and then they get to go up in the air and fly. And it's all because of Robin Stoddard and his great people down at Wright Flight.
All volunteers,
folks, please support them. WrightFlight.org, and Wright with a W, W-R-I-G-H-T,
like the Wright brothers.
Correct.
1900.
Yes.
Come on, Jeff. December 17th, 1903.
That's
Kitty
right. Kitty Hawk.
North Carolina.
That's right. And the history of aviation in Tucson, well documented on the Fred and Jeff Show, is an amazing thing. But you can also help Wright Flight out by joining the 1702
Club. 1903
Club. 1703
Club. 1903. What is up with you?
Just monkeying with you, Fred. 1903 Club's $19.03 a month puts a kid in the air, helps them keep their grades up. So y'all may want to consider that too.
Yeah, and you can sign up for that at rightflight.org.
O-R-G.
And that's through PayPal.
That's right.
Nice and safe.
All right, enough. We got to take our first break, and we're going to come back with some really cool stuff. Folks, you have not heard anything like this before on the Fred and Jeff Show. You've heard us fight. You've heard us bicker. You've heard us laugh, cheer. But what you're going to hear coming up after the break is something that we're really excited to bring to you. So stick around for more here on the Fred and Jeff Show.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Barker Morrissey Contractors, Casa de la Luz Hospice, and the Downtown Tucson Partnership.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
Dragon Hill. To love is not only to gaze at the other, but to gaze through the other. So wherever love sends me, I look. Among the painted locust, the blue-footed booby, the lava lizard, whose skin still burns with the earth's interior fire, Buddha returns as a land iguana, wearing the same mysterious smile, to sit in a small cave hollowed out of lava, his skin like living rock. In the Galapagos, isolation has made infinite variety out of one monotonous cry, a laboratory in evolution, we call it, the defunct eye of the tuna against the bottom of the boat. Here the earth is not your body, but the heaven you think you can be, the shimmering patina of the lightfoot crab, the happy ankles of the frigate birds shadowing your furrowed head, and Buddha in a lizard's visage wearing the spike crown. Human, animal, or divine, there's a large blackness in the center of the iguana's forehead, murky as a galaxy coalescing, a new face forming, and in the depths of the new cells, a third eye, its eyelid closed, dreaming, the heart's refrain, out of so much, so little, out of so little, so much.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we like to say we are the places, the events, the history, the culture of this great old Pueblo. And with us in studio, and Rebecca, forgive me, I murder last names all the time.
That's okay. I have a difficult last name. It's Seiferly.
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 Seiferly. So Rebecca Seiferly is here in studio with us. She is Tucson's poet laureate, and that was one of her wonderful pieces. Thank you for reading that for us.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for having me on your show.
Well, this is great. Now, we love talking about, you know, obviously the people, the places, all that stuff.
Sports.
Tequila.
Cigars.
Yeah, uh-huh. I have a bag here of cigars, actually.
I know, I see that over there. My ball in it.
Yeah, I know you are. So, Rebecca, tell us a little bit about yourself. Are you a native to Tucson?
No, I'm not. I moved to Tucson in 2006 from Boston. I had been poet in residence at Brandeis University for 2 years, and then prior to that, I'd lived a long time in New Mexico. So when my appointment at Boston was up, I wanted to move back to the Southwest, and I've been to Tucson. My oldest daughter went here as an undergrad, got her bachelor's degree here, so I visited frequently, and I had also been a visiting writer for the Poetry Center, so I knew it was a great literary and artistic community. It's very rich and diverse, and also very welcoming, so I thought this is where I want to be, so I moved here from Boston.
That is a great, great, great way to describe Tucson.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Rich, culturally diverse, and very welcoming.
Yes,
that's very nice. Thank you very much for that very nice, you know, description of Tucson.
Oh, well, I feel it. That's why I came here. When I first came here for the Poetry Center, I was impressed by that. As a visiting writer, I've been to a lot of different communities, and I moved a lot while I was a kid growing up, and that just immediately impressed me, that there's a great warmth and generosity.
Now, why did you move so often as a child?
Oh, my dad liked to move. That's the only way I can explain it.
Not a military guy or anything?
No.
He's just running from the law?
No.
Buddy, pack the bags, we gotta go.
Not to my knowledge.
Oh, you always have a bag packed.
Right. And by the door.
Yes, he had grown up in an orphanage. His parents came over from Switzerland, and he'd grown up in an orphanage in Chicago. And I think he was always looking for that home place or somewhere to be home. And he was a linotype operator, which was a very specialized skill in those days, and all printing was done and needed linotype operators. So he could decide to move somewhere, like today. We can be gone tomorrow, and he could have a job by the end of the week.
So, wow.
And so that went on until Offset came in and put linotype operators sort of out of business.
And then he was stuck in that last place.
Yes, exactly.
And that last place was Boston?
No, that place happened to be in New Mexico.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you moved to Boston for school.
No, I moved there to be poet in residence. I was teaching poetry to the students at Brandeis University.
So I'm very intrigued by poetry.
Uh-huh.
Because something that Fred may think is a phenomenal poem makes no sense to me, and vice versa. So, for instance, Fred is a master at the haiku.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Master haikuist over there.
Somewhere in my notebook here, I should try and pull it out. I have a haiku to tequila.
Yes.
Oh, yes. That's, yeah.
And I don't get haiku.
Uh-huh.
But a good poem is something that really stirs the soul.
Uh-huh. Yes, it is. I think so. It makes this human connection between one person's experience and sensibility and another person's sensibility through the power of language. And it is often subjective, I think. A lot of times people are turned off by poetry because they think it's like a difficult puzzle that they have to figure out. And with my students and young people and people just learning to write, I say it's like getting to know a person. You have that first encounter where you like them. There's something interesting about them. You meet them again for coffee or tequila. It's a relationship. It's the same thing with poems. There's something about some poems or some forms of poems that will hit a spark with certain people and not with others. And I think that's fine. That's just the nature of poetry. It reaches out to make human connection, but we're all different.
And how do you teach that? You've done it for so long, you must have it down to a science.
Well, I think the main thing to teach are a couple of general concepts, things like generosity and openness and a sense of wonder. In other words, don't close the door too fast. Don't shut the box too quickly. Give it time. Give it that sort of pause for a moment. See what you find in there that you can connect with. Maybe it's just one image or one line, like sort of snags you, hooks you in some way. That's good enough. Start there.
Yeah, the image that snagged me from the poem you read was about the blue-footed booby.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. My wife and I were just in Costa Rica.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It is amazing to see the birds, and you can just sit there and watch these birds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and do nothing and be so content.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and poetry tries to convey that kind of experience.
Yeah, that's amazing.
The thing about poetry that I find most intriguing is that it's never the same for anybody. In terms of, we hear nursery rhymes, and so we sort of have this expectation as a youth or a young soul that has to meter out and have rhymes at every two lines has to rhyme. And then, later life, you sort of get the poetry that's just scraps of phrases that create images. And, I remember when I was first exposed to that, I'm like, that doesn't rhyme. That's not a poem. And so,
I'm still that way. I have a hard time breaking that mold.
Uh-huh. And so it sort of is a skill or an art form that has so many different canvases, it's hard to capture, what is a poem, actually.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, that idea of different canvases, different media, like an artist would use. It's true, though, there's a lot of people who do have that idea of rhyme and meter. I grew up listening to rhymes and nursery rhymes and poems that my mother read to me.
Is that how it all started for you?
Yes, I think so. It's like my mother used to read to me two things primarily, children's poetry, these nursery rhymes, and then some more serious poems, but still in sort of the children's genres. I still remember parts of Robert Louis Stevenson's The Friendly Cow, all red and white, I love with all my heart.
Yum.
and then at the same time she read me Bible stories in his sort of reprinted version for children, so the story made an impact upon my imagination. But I think it's true that people do expect rhyme and meter. And a lot of times the reason we carry that into adulthood is because the strongest connection we had with poetry was when we were little. And we haven't made that connection since, so we haven't really...
Well, I mean, all the Dr. Seuss books, you know, all, well, I don't even know if they use these anymore, but Dick and Jane, when we were growing up, were the readers?
No, not really. I mean, the readers now are... They're not Dick and Jane. They're kind of these books that have a one or a two or three on them, and they're kind of like, they're kind of built like a Dick and Jane, but it's a little bit more complex.
Yeah.
And the only reason I know this is I've just learned to read. So no, but you know, when my kids were learning to read over the last couple of years, this is the kind of stuff that they're doing.
But when we were reading to our kids when they were, you know, small kids, I mean, it was The Hungry, Hungry Caterpillar.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all the Dr. Seuss.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Maurice Sendak, all
the places.
But it was all rhyming stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And even my favorite part of all that was the words that Dr. Seuss created.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
So he wanted something to rhyme, and there was no word, so he just created a word that rhymed.
Mm-hmm. No rhyme for orange?
No. Yeah, he's got millions of them. So I think that creativity is instilled at that young age, like it was in you, and hopefully in us, because our folks read and we read, and it's such a strong, important tool for people to embrace.
It is. It's, I think reading to kids from the earliest ages is fundamental in a way to their exposure to language and literacy and creativity in language. It's a fundamental
building block of their education.
Well, my youngest son, who's now 16, has been writing poetry for a long time, and actually one of his poems was featured at his eighth grade graduation.
Oh, cool.
And he creates, I mean, he crafts phrases that create images and no rhymes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, and he's very talented at using very minimal words, number of words, to create these really spectacular images. And most of them, you know, you could imagine are like teen angst. But he also creates a lot of, you know, just fun stuff, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great that he's doing that. And hopefully he'll keep it up regardless of what he does as a profession.
He writes all the time. Uh-huh. Although his aunt is still waiting for a letter from him. He went out and bought a typewriter for the sole purpose of writing letters to his friends. And he started doing it, and then... quickly, that stopped.
Went back to texting.
Well, he went back to Facebook.
Oh.
Messaging through Facebook.
Yes. That's funny. All right. Well, we have to take a quick break. We'll be back, folks, because we've got lots more to talk about being the poet laureate of Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
Such an interesting title, and I'm sure along with it comes some very cool responsibilities and Mercedes Benz and a house up in the hills and all that really cool stuff. So, yeah. I mean, you're a great guest because, you know, we get so many cool people that come in here and they're all our neighbors. You're our neighbor.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And we want folks to tell us what they do because, you know, it's cool to hear. So we've got more of that coming back when we come back. So folks, stick around for more here on the Fred and Jeff Show.
The Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by H&S Garden Service, Mayfield Florist, and Arizona Party Rental.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And welcome back, everybody. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we're celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful, Jeff.
Yeah, you know what's part of the folks that make Tucson a wonderful place to be?
Everyone.
Pretty much. There's lots and lots and lots and lots of great people out there in the community. But I'm thinking specifically one gentleman who is oftentimes a positive influence in my life and yours, but every once in a while spins off the rails and you have a lot of fun with him.
That sounds like Grandpa Ronstadt.
Yeah, he's my buddy Chris Phillips.
Oh.
I was out with Chris last night downtown goofing around, and boy, we had a lot of fun. We were at Playground. We went to that little speakeasy next to 47 Scott. Ended up at Finney's Landing, courtesy of a very nice taxi service. So it was good times. CJ's awake at this point. you know, the fact that it's 11:35, I just like to say good morning and thanks for a good time last night. Anyhow, I digress.
Well, thanks for the invite, by the way. And I had a bag of cigars, too, so...
Oh, I had cigars last night. Oh. Can't you tell the very deep
the
timbre of my voice? Yes.
Very nice. So before we get down to business, we invite people to visit us at friendjeff.com.
I thought I got you away from that one. Like us on Facebook.
No,
follow us on Twitter.
Our friend of the show, Ed Ackerley,
yes,
from Ackerley
Advertising. Dr. Ed Ackerley.
Dr. Ed Ackerley.
PhD.
He always gives us these notes after the show and says, you don't mention the Facebook page. You don't mention the website. You don't say who you are. You don't introduce your guest. Who the hell are you people?
So treats us like a couple of Eller College kids, right?
That's right.
Sheesh.
We get Fs every week. It's a wonder we're still in class. So with us is Tucson's own poet laureate, Rebecca Seiferly. Yay!
Yeah.
I said it right.
Good job.
Wow, Fred, you get a cookie.
So before the break, we were talking about all sorts of stuff. We were talking about how Rebecca made it to the Old Pueblo, her passion for the written word and teaching children. But during the break, we found out that there's going to be a touchstone moment for the community in poetry and getting kids involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. We've come up with the Tucson K-12 Poetry Contest, which is open to any student in grades K-12 from the city of Tucson, public school students, charter school students, so anyone's eligible to enter. Each student can enter one poem, and we're breaking them down into age categories. So we have K-3, and then 4-6th grade, and 7-8, and 9-12. And the contest will run this fall. The deadline for entries is November 8th, and entries can be dropped off at the Poetry Center. If anyone wants further information about this, they can email me. I have a email address through the Tucson Pima Arts Council, and that's poet@tucsonpimaartscouncil.org.
That's a mouthful. Poet at tucsonpimaartscouncil.org.
And okay. If people go to our website, they'll have that information. We'll actually put a link to your name on the website.
Yes, that'd be great.
Now,
so we're hoping that this is going to encourage... literacy, curiosity with literature, exploration of the world and your own experiences through language. And I'm also hoping to go into many schools in connection with this, doing these kinds of visits where I do mini workshops with the students or give readings, encourage them in the writing of their own poetry. Because I've seen from my experience in poets in schools programs that poetry is a great way to reach all students. It can be particularly effective with students who may not be connecting with the requirements of regular grammatical English, which can seem like more of a challenge. And if you can ignite that spark of self-expression and of curiosity and interest in the written word, that carries on. I've seen kids who I taught in kindergarten later on as freshmen in college, and they had carried that with them all the way from kindergarten into college. They felt that literature was something that was accessible to them. It had carried over into their academic success in reading and writing. So I think it's an important way to get young people involved in this, that the word and writing isn't just a dreary school task that they sort of put off in favor of Facebook or video games, but to ignite that spark.
Back to your contest. Is there a theme?
No, there is no theme. It is open, and students also will win a monetary prize for first place, and the top four entries, first, second, third, and honorable mention, will all be published as well.
Very cool.
Nice.
Very cool. So anything they want to write a poem about.
Yes, exactly.
From their turtle to Fred is fair game.
Yes, exactly.
Okay?
Yes.
Any kid that writes a poem about Fred, what's the first prize?
The person who writes
first
a poem about Fred.
Prize is $75.
Any kid that writes a poem about Fred.
Needs help.
And wins.
Needs help.
Will double the prize.
They need
okay,
help.
That sounds great.
Write it down.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
So it's great that this full spectrum of school kids are getting this opportunity.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm curious, before the break, we're talking about rhyme and meter versus just creating imagery. Where in that spectrum do you typically see the kids, like the light bulb goes on and go, oh, poetry is not just the rhyme. It could be creating these images. You know, where in that spectrum does that occur? Or is it sort of just depends on the individual?
That depends, I think, entirely on their exposure. For instance, if they have a poet go into the classroom and read poetry that isn't rhyme and meter, you'll, of course, hear, well, there's no rhyme, there's no meter. And so right there, they're suddenly aware that there are different types of poetry, like haiku, which doesn't have rhyme and meter, or longer poems, which emphasize more a story, or poems that collect, like, different lines that all create an image. So that's part of the exposure. It's basically bringing a poet into the classroom is that way students becoming aware that it's still a living art and that there are very different modes of practicing that art.
What do you mean by living art?
Well, I think there's a way in which sometimes in through the educational system, students can get the idea that they're reading these published poems in an anthology or a school book of some type, and it seems very remote and sort of stuffy. And so the living presence, that sense that people are writing poetry now and in a variety of ways, for many students, that's a revelation.
Right.
And that can happen in kindergarten. I've also known people who didn't realize until they got to college that there were a lot of contemporary poets out there working in these very different ways than the models they had grown up with.
Well, okay, so let's talk about you. That's a great transition to you, because you are a contemporary poet.
Uh-huh.
And you're published. You have 4 books on poetry.
Yes.
Incredible works, I might add.
Oh, thank you.
Sure. And so how did you get that fire? We talked earlier about your mom reading to
uh-huh.
you. But, you know, a lot of life happens between, you know, being with mom and
yes,
being, you know, being read poetry to finding a vocation.
Mm-hmm.
Who were some of the folks, or what were some things that happened to you to get you from that, you know, that experience at home to where you are today, the Poet Laureate of Tucson?
Well, I think one of the things was my mother reading to me, but my father also wanted to be a poet. In fact, when he met my mother, after they married, they moved to Concord, Massachusetts, where he wanted to write poetry. That didn't turn out so well. He ended up doing other things, but he would often go back to writing at different stages of his life. So it helped that I had a family that valued the literary arts in a variety of ways. And my mother, too, at a later point, wrote some children's poems. So that was, I think, very important. And then I think for me, one of the big influences, when I was about 9 years old in Vermont, we had an English assignment, and it was supposed to have rhyme and meter, supposed to be 3 stanzas about our favorite place. And my favorite place was this beautiful meadow in the Vermont woods by a stream, and the stream came around the meadow and broke into a deep pool. So I can still remember lying there and trying to write my poem. And I was sort of frustrated with the form, but I could figure that out, the rhyme and meter and that kind of stuff. But I felt just completely frustrated in terms of being able to express how I truly felt. I could not say how it felt to be in that place, what feelings the place sort of evoked in me, the smell of the flowers, the sound of the stream, and it made me aware that I didn't know how and I didn't have the language to truly express my own experience. And that feeling made me also realize how much I wanted to, how much I wanted to express.
At 9 years old.
Uh-huh. And that's what did it.
Did you sell that poem? The one you actually wrote?
My mother writes somewhere in her cedar chest, probably.
That's very cool.
Uh-huh.
That's very cool. Because I think all of us have felt that frustration at something in our life.
Right.
And those that take it to the point where they kind of overcome that frustration,
mm-hmm.
find that epiphany to be something that is life-changing, like what happened
exactly.
to you.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's amazing.
Yeah. It was that sense of being so profoundly inarticulate about my own experience, and it also made me realize how important that was to me.
But not just in language,
uh-huh.
you know, not just speaking, saying something to somebody, but writing it so that other people that you're not with can have that shared experience.
Yes, exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Your books, and mm-hmm. and I don't know how much time we've got left. We probably have
about 15 minutes.
Okay, so well, let's take a quick break. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back, because I really want to ask you about your books. I'm very intrigued with your work,
uh-huh.
and if we could share that with our listeners, I'd appreciate that.
We still need to know what the heck a poet laureate is.
That's right. So, folks, we'll be right back. You stick around for more here on The Fred and Jeff Show.
This portion of The Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Power Woman Investing, Ronsted Insurance, and 1702 Craft Beer and Pizza.
Now, time for more of The Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And welcome back. This is The Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronsted. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we're celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture, and cigars that make living in Tucson.
Cigars.
And Southern Arizona cigars are wonderful. But during the break, our guest, Rebecca Seiferly, was talking about how the literary community has embraced cigars. Now, before we get to that, Rebecca is Tucson's poet laureate. And so I just want to, you know, say that. But I want to know how the literary community is embracing cigars, because I want to join that community.
Fred, you're a member of that community. The Haiku Master, Fred. We are naming Tucson's Haiku Master.
I have up my haiku here.
You found it?
Yeah.
Boy, here we go.
No.
Yeah, I was telling Jeff that a couple of times I was visiting Reiner at the Key West Literary Seminars. And after all the readings and the various events, they'd either have chocolate and champagne receptions, or it was champagne and cigar.
Well, you have to have a cigar when you're in Key West.
Yes, it's
Hemingway's turf.
There you go.
Great place to visit his old house.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Uh-huh.
So before we took our last break, we asked you a couple questions that we would like to hear the answer to now. And the number one thing is, what is the Poet Laureate of Tucson's responsibilities?
What is the Poet Laureate, first of all?
Okay, there you go.
Yes, well, the term laureate comes...
It's a Greek term.
It's a Greek
meaning
term.
Meaning small, round orange or something like that?
Well, it was basically among the Greeks, the way they honored playwrights, poets, and athletes was they gave you the laurel wreath. So, basically, it's the Poet Laureate is the poet with the laurel wreath crown. So it's a great honor in the sense of acknowledging your work and the work that you've already done as a poet and also in your community. As we envisioned the Poet Laureate, and I was appointed by Mayor Rothschild at the end of September in 2012, is one of our focuses is bringing poetry into the community and particularly into the schools. So there's been a lot of focus upon my visiting various schools or being involved in various programs. I was one of the judges for the Poetry Out Loud competition for high school students.
Oh, tell us about that.
The Poetry Center. Well, that's basically students have a number of poems to choose from. They memorize the poem and they present it, they perform it, and try to come up with a performance that sort of embodies the poem. And I'm happy to say that our Southern Arizona Regional Competition, which is held at the Poetry Center, that we've frequently gone to the Nationals, and our winner this year ended up winning the Arizona State Competition.
Sweet!
So, a lot of interest in poetry that way, and then I was also involved as a judge and presenter for the River of Words Competition, which is mostly grades 6 and under mostly participated this year, but it's basically children writing to a sort of ecological theme, understanding how the role that water plays in this desert environment.
That's a great way to get the word out.
So the emphasis in my being poet laureate is upon education and outreach of poetry into various aspects of the community and into education.
That's fabulous. Fabulous.
So what are the responsibilities of the laureate? Just to,
the responsibilities are to give several public performances or readings during the year.
Does this count?
Yeah, you should tell Jonathan. Hey, I was on the Fred and Jeff show.
I wrote a poem on the Fred and Jeff show. One down.
I'll bring that up.
Yeah. tell Mayor Watchow we'll send him the bill.
So there are some public responsibilities in terms of various events that they might want me to be present at. And one of the things about it is we've had kind of a gap in the poet laureates. Our first poet laureate was William Pitt Root back in the 90s. And then, more recently, Ophelia Zepeda was poet laureate. So actually I'm the third, but we've had these kinds of gaps. So we're trying to create a kind of structure that will carry over to future poet laureates.
Yeah, because there's not just three poets in Tucson.
Yes, exactly.
Well, but the poet laureate program didn't start in Tucson until the 90s?
Uh-huh.
And I apologize. When you first said that, I was assuming you were going to say the 1890s.
Yeah. No,
but
1990.
It's brand new.
Uh-huh. It's a new program in many respects.
And yeah. Well, how old is the Poetry Center?
Oh, that goes back to, and I don't have the date of that, but that goes back to the era of Robert Frost and the late 50s.
Okay.
So
someone just got off the dime in the 90s to figure out we mm-hmm. needed a poet laureate
yeah.
and how important that would be to bring that to the schools.
Yes, exactly.
And that's what you're doing.
Uh-huh, yes.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So, I earlier we talked about your published works.
Uh-huh.
And you brought in one today called Wild Tongue.
Yes, that's my most recent collection.
It's fabulous. And I just happened to pick it up during the break, and I opened it up to page 27, and the name of the poet, or the name of the poem, is Sexual Disgust.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts like this: the kiss of the leech in the irrigation ditches of childhood, blood colored with mud and debris, with a mouthful of delicate sleep. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
Well, I think that image came back to me from childhood. One of the places at one point that I lived was Fort Collins, and they have a City Park Lake there. We used to go fishing quite often. They used to stock it with trout. And I was about 11, I guess, at the time. And along the lake, they also had these ditches where the water would flow. But what we didn't know when we first went in them was the ditches had a lot of leeches in them. So we came out of the water with these leeches attached to our leg. And I know now that a leech, actually, when it attaches itself to you, it has a kind of form of anesthesia, so you don't feel it at that moment of attachment. That's the mouthful of sleep idea in the poem. And so one of the preoccupations of my poetry is this way of seeing the wonder or beauty of things that are often dismissed as simply terrible or marginal or not worth looking at. So, and the leech is certainly one of those creatures where people are, their reaction is like, ugh, kind of disgust or revulsion. So one of the preoccupations of my work is to take those creatures or even a marginalized people and to see the dignity or the wonder. These two things, too, were also created with the same mysterious sense of purpose and beauty, and to convey that in my writing.
So you could do probably a fantastic poem about the Fred and Jeff Show.
So that's a very intriguing theme in your work. And what do you think, if people were to understand or see the most repulsive subject and then have you twist it around, what do you think that would have been so far in your canon? What topic do you think would people be most repelled against, and then you come around and see the light in it?
Well, I think so. Sometimes I've spent a lot of time in nature, and in fact, I think if I hadn't become a poet, or until that point where I decided that was the direction in which I was going, I had planned to be a biologist. So I have this strong, I've always had this strong interest in the natural world. So I think, when I think in terms of the impact, I think sometimes it's been these animal poems. For instance, in my first book, The Ripped Out Seam, I have a poem about where I was digging out a pit, basically, for my kids to play with their cars. And by accident, without knowing it, I chopped a horned toad in half, which I didn't realize until I saw part of it in the shovel and the other half.
Yeah.
Still sitting there looking at me. And it's a very vivid poem, or so I've had people tell me that after they read it, the guy who ran the Key West Literary Seminar, he said, "Well, your toad, I saw it in this morning in the mirror when I was shaving. That's all." So perhaps that's had the most impact. That's always a hard question about impact, and I think it's the sense of what's marginal.
Well, tell us what you meant when you said one should always read a poem as if it were a matter of life and death.
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think there's a way for me in which the word has this great power to create life or destroy life. In other words, the word can oppress you. The word can lift its great power, and it's a life or death power. It's that power of inspiration, or on the other hand, to be cast down into depression. It's that power of life and death. And I know, for instance, when I've read poems that have that effect, that sense of life, it's like this new awareness of consciousness of life, this sort of openness and insight that you don't have ordinarily.
That's wonderful. Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We really appreciate spending time with you.
Oh, thank you.
And thanks for what you're doing in our schools, and please continue your work. It's fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
And if I can, I'd like to say I'll be reading on Saturday, August 24th.
Where?
At the Bailey House, which is on North Blue Ridge Road. You can check out the reading on the Casa Libre website. It's a fundraiser.
All right, we'll link it to the Fred and Jeff Show. We'll have a link on our webpage, fredandjeff.com.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, brother, another great week here in the Old Pueblo.
We're done.
And folks, get out there and meet your neighbors, because those are the people that make Tucson a great place to live. So we'll see you next week here on the Fred and Jeff Show.